Welcome to Pacifica Matters. This is John Martinez, programmer at Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles. Pacifica is the only national listener-sponsored radio network in the country. It was founded more than 50 years ago to promote discussions of issues affecting your community and to feature voices and viewpoints from the community itself with the goal of achieving understanding, cooperation, and peace. Pacifica is truly radio of the people, radio by, for, and of the people. With stations located in New York, Houston, Berkeley, Los Angeles, and the People's Democratic Republic of Washington, D.C., and a family of affiliated independent stations around the country, Pacifica has the potential to reach 1 in 6 Americans through the most democratic of all broadcast mediums, FM radio. The role of independent radio as an outlet for truthful, uncensored news, insightful analysis, and free expression makes us the lifeblood of the community and a catalyst for progressive social change. Recently, Pacifica has weathered a political storm that nearly cost it its life. We survive because of the dedication and activism of listeners like you, and your continued involvement is more important than ever. Soon, Pacifica listeners will be asked to elect governing boards of each of the 5 Pacifica stations, thus giving the listeners democratic control of the network for the first time ever. Pacifica Matters is a program dedicated to the governance of Pacifica, as well as to issues of democracy and the role of independent radio. Stay tuned to learn more about your radio network and how to have a voice in this crucial national dialogue.
We've come a long way, and what tonight represents is a historic milestone. Because clearly those who have hijacked Pacifica have in a sense reached the end of their rope. And we understand that changes are in the works. And there are many in the African community that feel very good about these changes. But at the same time, we're very bitter, we're very skeptical, and we are approaching everything with a great deal of caution. One of the things that needs to be clear in this new Pacifica, in the new configuration, is that African people and people of color need to exist on a level of absolute parity with every structure within Pacifica. This, what has happened in the past, the kind of subterfuge that had gone on, the corruption that set so deeply into Pacifica, that turned off so many people, that made stations an inhospitable place for people of color, that atmosphere has to be a thing of the past. All of us that were dismissed need to be returned. We need to have our programs back. Something else needs to happen, and some of you may not like what I'm about to say, but there is a large segment of the white community in this country, and even among the white left, that seeks to deny the humanity of Africans and people of color. And for that reason, they cannot fathom this notion that we're to exist in a relationship with them in an institution like Pacifica, where resources and power are shared, where we exist on a level of absolute human equality. Make no mistake about it. We're not talking about anything less than that. Anything less than that is unacceptable. And yes, it means that at times, African programmers and others will criticize Israel and will criticize Zionism. And when that happens, we should not be misjudged as being anti-Semitic. That kind of stuff has to stop. And while I'm up here alone, I didn't come here alone, and I don't speak for just myself. Make no mistake about it. Something else that needs to happen is that programming for people of color is something that needs to be expanded and needs to be established in a very serious way within Pacifica. We also have grown tired of the paint jobs, and we see this in the Bush administration with Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell. That's not to happen in Pacifica. That's not what Pacifica is supposed to be about. Pacifica is supposed to be about the struggle.
That was exiled KPFK programmer Ron Wilkins speaking in Los Angeles last winter at a public forum which included Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, and actor and progressive activist Danny Glover. A short time later, a settlement was reached in the legal battle between the Pacifica community and Pacifica's former national board, giving effective control of Pacifica to the plaintiffs. Now, some 6 months after reclaiming the network, we checked in with another of KPFK's fired black programmers to see what progress has been made.
My name is Kenneth Dedon Carr. I'm a former national board member for 1 year, local advisory board chairman for 4 years, vice chairman for 4 years, and producer of a program called Freedom Now, which is a talk music information program for over 9 years, and part of the African programmers and lab members and volunteers of South Central Los Angeles that were not only kicked off the air, a ban from the station. Our campaign, it goes back to 91, 92, 93, when we were the first to be targeted by a number of forces, including, the corporatization of Pacifica and us being too, quote, unradical, as well as the FBI, as well as the Anti-Defamation League of Benai Brith, as well as certain congressmen, one from Colorado, Congressman Heffley, that actually took my show and wrote it ready within the Congressional Records and used that as an excuse to try to close down the funding for Pacifica. And so it's been a series of assaults against the band, black programmers and lab members at KPFK. And we've had conducted a protest and boycott at KPFK for over 9 years, up to and including going to national board meetings with our campaign to have parity, ethnic and primarily ethnic and gender parity at Pacifica. And parity means fundamentally that the central mission statement should be lived up to, a voice for the voiceless. I think we talk about the voiceless in the United States. We're talking primarily about Native American Chicano people. We're talking about African people. We're talking about Asian people, but especially Native American and Spanish-speaking people and African people. We've always been targeted for terrorism by the ruling class, primarily because we were stolen and the land was stolen from traditional peoples. So we have fought for the inclusion of traditional peoples and Spanish-speaking Chicano, Mexicanos, and African people to have parity, to have equal representation, from the most fundamental level of volunteerism to the staff, paid staff, unpaid staff, to the local advisory board, to the national board, as well as on the sound of Pacifica. For African programmers, we're constantly relegated to be the ones who do the music but can't voice a political analysis or political opinion, especially if it's divergent from the dominant political ideology of Pacifica. And a lot of us subscribe to class analysis, but we also include a national analysis of the national oppression, which concludes with the right of indigenous people and traditional peoples to self-determination, up to including the question of Pan-Africanism, black nationalism, Native American Chicano nationalism, which is abhorrent to most of the white male ideologues that control the national board, as well as the general managers throughout the Pacifica Foundation. And this is a historical contradiction between within the progressive camp, the role of people of color in determining their own destiny. So, of course, the role of white supremacy and white nationalism is quite evident if you look at the present socio-political economic structure of the United States of America. The parity for us means not only inclusion of bodies, but bodies represent the real aspirations of oppressed people in their communities, as opposed to having somebody who may be black in color, whose essential politics and social base tends to come from the liberal European or the Marxist or the hippie communities, which basically means they represent that constituency as opposed to representing the black community organizationally, as well as in terms of united fronts and numerous formations that exist in our community. We think the representation should come from the grassroots of our community and not handpicked Negroes that are basically representing their own self-interest or other interests that are alien to the African struggle. You all know Pacifica is in transition now, both locally and nationally, so we're waiting to see the smoke settle. But I know at the national board meeting, we made a presentation, Ron Wilkins and myself, and I actually submitted a formal document to the national board with a series of demeanor requests, and so far we've not heard nothing at all, not even a discussion about what we raised. Though at the national board meeting, I was held in Los Angeles, we got, you know, rounding standing ovation, there was a lot of enthusiasm, and afterwards people came up and said they agreed, they'll be supportive of, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When the smoke cleared a couple of days later, we had not got one phone call or one response from those requests made for the banned black programmers being not only put back on the air, but the question of parity. So we want a judicial process so that when someone's accused of racial, religious, gender, class chauvinism, that a process for reconciliation be developed. We're trying to cure people who practice these kind of behaviors and not kill them. As of this point in time, there is no process for this. Somebody could say, you're anti-Semitic, and without any discussion being had, you put off the air. But in fact, many times I know for myself, I'm not anti-Semitic, I'm anti-Zionist, I'm pro-Palestinian struggle. We also believe that but it has to be some kind of paradigm that guarantees that all people are involved with Pacifica, especially the voiceless, going back to Lewis Hill's original statement. I don't think West Side, middle class, upper middle class, progressive whites can be considered the voiceless in America, especially in Los Angeles, since they have so many radio stations and magazines, and even in L.A. Times, they're considered liberal as vehicles to express their points of views and their ideologies and their, you know, their reality.
You see why 2K and 2 is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns are still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa, or drive by bang in Testarossa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas, steam your body in the stereo, sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend, every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Say boom bap. Tell your neighbor, tell a friend, every flower got a right to be blooming.
But the black man can't hide. When they start indicting us because of our color, that means we're indicted before we're born, which is the worst kind of crime that can be committed.
Brother Malcolm X, another outspoken African-American intellectual, has always had a home on Pacifica. We bring you this clip from the Pacifica archives.
Elijah Muhammad had taught us that the white man could not enter into Mecca in Arabia, and all of us who followed him, we believed it. And he said the reason he couldn't enter was because he's white and inherently evil, and it's impossible to change him. And the only thing that would change him is Islam, and he can't accept Islam because by nature he's evil. And therefore, by not being able to accept Islam and become a Muslim, he could never enter Mecca. And this is how he taught us. And, you know, and so when I got over there and went to Mecca and saw these people who blonde and blue-eyed and pale skin and all those things, I said, well, but I watched them closely, and I noticed that there was, though they were white, and they would call themselves white, there was a difference between them and the white one over here. And that basic difference was this. In Asia, or the Arab world, or in Africa, where the Muslims are, if you find one who says he's white, all he's doing is using an adjective which, to describe something that's incidental about him, one of his incidental characteristics. So there's nothing else to it, he's just white. But when you get the white man over here in America, and he says he's white, he means something else. You can listen to the sound of his voice when he says he's white. He means he's boss. That's right. That's what white means in this language. You know the expression, free, white, and 21. He made that up. He's letting you know all of them mean the same. White means free, boss. He's up there. So that when he says he's white, he has a little different sound in his voice. And I know you know what I'm talking about. Despite the fact that I saw that Islam was a religion of brotherhood, I also had to face reality. And when I get back into this American society, I'm not in a society that practices brotherhood. I'm in a society that might preach it on Sunday, but they don't practice it on no day, on any day. And so since I could see that America itself is a society where there is no brotherhood, and that this society is controlled primarily by racists and segregationists, and it is, this is a society whose government doesn't hesitate to inflict the most brutal form of punishment and oppression upon dark-skinned people all over the world. To wit, right now, what's going on in and around Saigon and Hanoi and in the Congo and in elsewhere. They are violent when their interests are at stake. But that, with all of that violence that they display at the international level, when you and I want just a little bit of freedom, we're supposed to be nonviolent. They're violent. They're violent in Korea, they're violent in Germany, they're violent in the South Pacific, they're violent in Cuba, they're violent wherever they go. But when it comes time for you and me to protect ourselves against lynchers, they tell us to be nonviolent.
Documents written,
For 4 days leading up to the interim Pacifica National Board meeting in June, a conference was held at San Francisco's new college called Pacifica Now. Many workshops and speeches were given on topics ranging from Pacifica's bylaws to the increasing privatization of media and the concentration of media ownership by corporations like Clear Channel. By far, the most well-attended workshop was one devoted to the issues of affirmative action and racial and gender diversity at Pacifica. Held in 3 consecutive sessions, this workshop lasted more than 20 hours and produced a document that was submitted as a proposal to the interim Pacifica board. We spoke with Don Foster, veteran Pacifica activist and one of the initiators of that workshop.
Hey, my name is Don Foster. I'm a former public affairs director at KPFA. Before that, after that, I was a news and public affairs director at the Washington station WPFW. I'm currently working on a project called the Alliance for People's Pacifica, which is basically designed to inform a public debate about the crucial issues that are facing the network and the progressive movement in the United States as well.
Now, you've just spent the last several days in an intensely deliberative process developing a set of proposals for addressing issues or deficits within Pacifica related to diversity, racial inclusiveness, composition of the governing bodies, that sort of thing. Can you talk about the history of that process? Why was it needed and how did you start?
Well, as in all organizations, we suffer under the reign of a kind of white supremacist ideology. And this is something that affects all of the institutions, including Pacifica historically. And through the years, the institution Pacifica has not really been all that successful at dealing with that issue of white supremacy and the underrepresentative or the lack of inclusiveness of ethnic minorities. So these proposals that we came up with were designed to address that problem. The history of it was that there have been many proposals, as you can imagine, in Pacifica throughout its history. The interesting thing about the notion of the humanity of all people or the need for diversity is even brought up in the founding documents of the institution, the mission statement. So proposals have been made, but also some proposals have been ineffective. The issue of racial diversity in Pacifica is one of the things that was at the core of the crisis that happened in the late 90s. So that process continues to try to come up with solutions to problems. Unfortunately, the kinds of solutions that have been proposed in the past have been based on trying to get the numbers right. And what that does is that it drops out the component of quality, the political positions and the political orientations and the connections that people have to community is dropped out, and the institution just tries to get the numbers right. And what we're proposing to the Pacifica Board is that they engage in a process that will debate these issues both internally and publicly for the benefit of Pacifica and the movement generally, so that we could try to develop strategies that might be more successful in dealing with both the qualitative and the quantitative issues. Basically, it's built upon a document that was initially proposed at the board meeting that happened in Los Angeles back in March. So, and that document was basically a set of goals and rules about implementing an affirmative action program. And the criticism of that emerged at this more recent meeting was that it didn't deal with the qualitative issues involved with who gets programming and who represents which communities and how do you deal with a process that will lead to real solutions. And so what was proposed was that we engage in an ongoing debate in Pacifica where we would publicly process and ask these questions and try to bring the listeners as well as ourselves along in our thinking. But then there are those issues about how do you deal with the injustices that are manifest in stations in an immediate sense. And a process alone, talking about it, might not get us anywhere. It might just only be a talk. So then it becomes a problem of instituting rules as well, and goals as well. And so this document does that. And at the Pacifica Now conference, we deliberated and talked and processed and agonized for about 20 hours. The document that we have is flawed only by the lack of participation by staff members at stations and by the board itself. So I think that we're critical of the fact that it was so hard to attract, despite many attempts and a totally open process. It was still difficult to get the attention of the board and staff members to actively participate in this process. It was kind of the level at which that was discouraging. And so the challenge that we put forward to the board and to the stations now is to engage in this process, right, to take this document and try to look at it and see how it can implement it, see how it can improve upon it, how it can report to us about what it would like to do and how it will engage. And obey. The way that I see that personally is that I see that this document requires a kind of interrogation by people. People need to look at it and question and say, how does it work and how doesn't it work? And what might we do to improve upon it? But how will we implement the kinds of suggestions that are put forward?
The following is the report of the Anti-Racism Working Group of the Pacifica Now Conference. We dedicate this report to three inspirational role models for the new Pacifica we seek to build. Michael Taylor was a grassroots African-American news and public affairs producer who was fired by Los Angeles Pacifica station KPFK in the early 1990s because of his fierce commitment to progressive reporting, and went on to help create an activist, black community, low-power radio station. This work contributed to his execution-style murder in 1995. Samori Marksman was the visionary Afro-Caribbean program director at WBAI who led the racial and political transformation of that station. He died of a heart attack in the heat of the Pacifica struggle in 1999. Finally, June Jordan was the brilliant African-American bisexual writer, social justice activist, founder of Poetry for the People, which provides a voice for young people of color, and supporter of the struggle to reclaim Pacifica. She died last week of breast cancer.
During the Pacifica Now conference from June 18th to the 21st in San Francisco, a racially diverse group of more than 25 listeners, activists, and present and former staff members from four of the five Pacifica stations, all but WPFW in Washington, D.C., met over 18 hours to discuss anti-racist initiatives for the network. We had rich, thoughtful, and frank discussions, the highlight of which was a fascinating fishbowl in which the people of color shared experiences and proposals with each other while the white folks listened, and then the entire group reflected together. Throughout our dialogues, we heard countless stories of producers of color who were rejected for jobs and programs, disrespected, harassed, fired, and banned. We heard of tokenistic gestures and pigeonholing. We heard of non-existent or underfunded training programs for youth of color. We heard of insensitive white managers and narrow, white-focused programming that excluded or minimized coverage of poor communities of color. The strong message from this sharing was that an ongoing, rigorous dialogue is critical in promoting the necessary changes in Pacifica. Our discussions led to the following conclusions and proposals.
Number one, a central part of Pacifica's mission is to foster education, understanding and dialogue about the causes of conflict between the races and nationalities. We appreciate the commitment expressed by this interim national board and the new national and local managements to work toward a new Pacifica that more fully fulfills its mission. Nevertheless, we see serious problems in the current performance of the stations and network on several fronts: recruitment, training, hiring, promotions, grievance resolution, leadership, and our most important end product, programming, addressing the issues facing people of color and immigrants, particularly working class and poor people. Indeed, even the interim national board itself lacks representation of Latinos, Asian Pacific, Islanders, Arabs, and indigenous peoples. In all these areas, Pacifica can and must do better.
Number two, our goal must be nothing less than the realization of non-racist and non-classist culture of democratic inclusion within Pacifica. This in turn can allow the network to play a cutting-edge role in educating and empowering oppressed communities nationwide in the fight against racial and economic injustice. We must become the change we desire. By transforming our own practice, Pacifica can become a model and beacon for many movements for progressive social and political change in the United States.
Number three, in light of the immense social, cultural, and media pressures against developing such a new practice, we hold that this can only be fully realized through ongoing education and dialogue on these issues, both internally with staffs, managements, local and national boards, and listener activists through training and workshops, and externally with listeners at large through on-air programs and town hall meetings throughout the Signal area. There must also be goals, guidelines, and evaluation implementation mechanisms to assure the attainment of this goal.
Number four, equally important as tackling issues facing people of color and immigrants, Pacifica must address the needs of and act equitably towards other oppressed groups in society, especially women, lesbians and gay men, bisexuals, transgender people, people with disabilities, working class and poor people, young and old people. All these populations are facing interconnected forms of oppression. Our deliberations addressed race and nationality as a critical starting point. Now, we strongly urge listeners, staff, local and national management and boards to similarly study and deliberate with the aid of relevant community groups about the needs of these communities, and similarly develop and implement steps towards solving the problems of these groups.
Based on these findings, we strongly urge the Interim Pacific National Board, the Local Advisory Board, National Management, Station Management to adopt the following proposals. Decision and adoption of parts of this agenda should begin in all other decision-making and administrative bodies of Pacifica. Background on development of this document. In March 2002, during the Interim Pacific National Board meeting in Los Angeles, several African American and Latino producers who had been fired and banned in the 1990s by LA Pacifica Station, KPFK, made passionate presentations about the devastation effects of their removal on their communities. These statements inspired an ad hoc group of listeners and producers from New York and Los Angeles to meet and brainstorm a tentative plan of action on racism within Pacifica. Later, the diversity community of the local advisory board at Berkeley Station, KPFA, also worked on these issues. All of this work provided the foundation for participation in an affirmative action workshop at the Pacifica Now conference in June 2002 to further develop these ideas into this document.
The Interim Pacifica National Board, acknowledging the long history of racial and nationality inequities in U.S. society at large and within this radio network, commits the foundation to a policy of equity and inclusion of populations historically and currently disenfranchised based on race and nationality. Throughout Pacifica, we must create breakthroughs that will stimulate dialogue, consciousness raising, and action on these issues. In addition, the board will set goals, guidelines, and implementation evaluation mechanisms to achieve racially and nationally inclusive staffing, operations, and programming throughout the network.
Education dialogue. Number one, training and workshops at all five stations and national office, pay and unpaid staff and their unions, management, personnel, and local advisory boards, labs, should cooperatively plan and implement training and workshops focusing on issues of race and nationality and their intersection with other forms of oppression, such as class, gender, sexuality, and disability. These training and workshops should be offered to pay and unpaid staff, management personnel, volunteers, listener, activists, lab, and national board members at least once a year, and preferably at least every 6 months.
Two, programming on internal Pacifica issues. Each station program director should work with the program council, local producers, and community organizations to air ongoing programs, including panel discussions, town hall meetings, other community forums, and documentaries aimed at advancing anti-racist awareness, knowledge, and practice within Pacifica. Such programming and forums should relate not only to psychocultural dynamics in society at large, but also specifically to Pacifica's internal dynamics as they're determined by its structures, its bylaws, and policies. In addition, the executive director will designate a national staff person to coordinate local station personnel in collaborating on national and locally produced programming on these issues.
Number three, staff composition. The foundation will establish as a minimum standard or goal a composition of paid and unpaid staff in each department, i.e. public affairs, arts, operations, etc., and management personnel that reflects at least the percentage of people of color and immigrants and the population of each signal area for local stations and for the country, for the national office, and of the country for the national office. To this end, the foundation commits to the energetic practice of affirmative action and the staff search, recruitment, hiring, and promotion policies, as well as with contracted and subcontracted work, by actively seeking out individuals from those disenfranchised groups who are committed to the Pacificas mission.
Resources for staff diversity. At the station and national level, resources should be targeted to increase the involvement of members of racially and nationally disenfranchised groups in Pacifica programming and operations. That means the establishment and funding of apprenticeships, training programs, internships, all three of these particularly for youth of color, and subsidies for transportation and child care for trainees and paid and unpaid staff who need them.
Number five, committee composition. All committees at all levels of the foundation, particularly hiring, search, and programming committees, must strive to incorporate from their inception, including at the leadership level, at least 50% people of color and immigrants from varied communities who are committed to Pacifica's mission. If this goal cannot be reached at the outset, the committee must adopt a plan and timetable to meet it.
Number six, local programming on external issues. Local program schedules and national Pacifica programs must include major coverage, including during prime time, of the underreported political issues, empowerment efforts, and artistic expressions of working class and poor people of color, and immigrants from varied racial national groups. Among the offerings should be segments on cross-racial dialogue, both between whites and people of color, and between different groups of people of color and immigrants. To the maximum extent possible, programs on these issues should be produced by individuals and collectives from the disenfranchised communities themselves. These guidelines should be applied to existing as well as new programs. Local schedules should include some bilingual programming in the major languages spoken in the signal area. National programming on external issues. Given the particular urgency of racism and xenophobia in this country today, the National Office will facilitate the creation of a racially, nationally diverse collective of producers from various community radio stations to develop ongoing nationally broadcast programs aimed at promoting education and dialogue on one, issues of race and nationality and their intersection with class and gender, both nationally and internationally, and two, empowerment efforts, campaigns by communities fighting these and related forms of oppression. This may include national airing of extraordinary local radio programs.
Number eight, the last point, implementation and evaluation. Subject to union agreement, each station's paid and unpaid staff and their unions, management, and local advisory board will jointly choose a paid multicultural coordinator who could already be a paid staff member as soon as feasible. This coordinator will monitor implementation of these and other non-discrimination and inclusion policies, perform necessary staff surveys, and compile statistical data, and finally offer a supplementary channel to any existing mechanism for grievances on the basis of race, nationality, and other areas of discrimination. A similar participatory process should occur to choose such a coordinator for the national office. Each multicultural coordinator will work with diversity or inclusion committees of the staff and local advisory board, along with management, to periodically evaluate the stations or the national offices applicable overall implementation of these policies, and to make recommendations for specific policies to address systemic problems. The Anti-Racism Working Group will evaluate progress on implementation of these points by the time of the next meeting of the Interim Pacifica National Board in September.
This is Twilight Bay, community activist and self-proclaimed street professor. and I come to say that Pacifica Radio was founded more than 50 years ago to promote dialogue, lending mutual understanding between people of all cultures and backgrounds, and to provide and promote an outlet for expression for people in the communities left behind by commercial media. Pacifica is our national community building tool, a way for us to make our concerns and our voices heard, a place for coming together to listen and to exchange ideas with the goal of promoting peace between all people and nations.
In the last few months, a number of programming changes have been made at Pacifica Station WBAI in New York. One of the new programs that has been added is First Voices, a focusing on the issues and concerns of Native American people. We spoke with one of the producers of First Voices at the Clearwater Folk Music Festival on the Hudson River in June of this year.
My name is Teokasin Vo, and I'm a Lakota Native person, and I'm a co-host of a Thursday morning, 10 a.m. on WBAI's First Voices. We talk basically about indigenous reality-based struggles that are happening on the land, because to us, the traditional Native people and thinkers, and processes of indigenous people is that we think first from the land, about the land, and with the land. And so what we try to do is bring those voices that are basically non-privileged, don't have the resources to go out and speak for themselves because they have neither the money nor the transportation nor the media to do such things. But I think a lot of people are talking to Native people who are Native Americans, basically Native American, American Indians, whatever politically is correct this year, is that they're the ones that they're paying attention to is the ones who are working with the UN, working with the United States government in that arena where you require that type of education, linear type of education, European indoctrinated education in order to convey the message. But it's too often now that those types of Indians have lost the traditional sense of feeling and being with the earth, so that that voice of indigenous is lost. So they're talking about recognition from the United States giving them recognition as American Indians. So they're playing the game. Indigenous people who just don't want anything to do with anything that capitalism proselytizes, such as democracy, such as the American way, such as technology, don't want those salvation point mentalities. So we bring that voice to the air that they're on the front lines and trying to retain and keep their original instructions with the land. And with that land comes the true spirit of what is indigenous to this country. So that's what we try to bring to the air. And with our forum is more of a politically, ecological, spiritual aspect, because we are talking to the people who know the language and who have lived on the reservations, whether it's the reservation or off, in the United States, in North America, who understand how to convey that message. And they want nothing to do with the UN. They want nothing to do with the United States government. They want nothing to do with that thinking that is predatory upon our Mother Earth. It's often too far construed that, or misconstrued that these traditional people are hardcore, which to me I think that's needed, so that a base of indigenous people is still here, and we understand as indigenous traditional thinkers that's the basis of our spirituality and learning how to live and have peace with earth. And the other Native people can go where they want with their casinos, with their government sanctioned organizations, and do that for themselves. They have to realize that the prophecies say that there will be Native people who stray to do that. So we bring those traditional first voices to the air. What Pacifica used to be, or is now, or is getting away from, is it used to be more of a, because America is a political culture, or society, let's put it, culture is not, but a society it is. It's political society. But what's happening with the return of conservative McCarthy era type politics, G.W. Bush, global warming Bush, is that they are what we have to do as people, as human beings of all nationalities, whatnot, all labels, need to start going into political ecology. Because that's meaning that we lean closer to the spiritual aspect of who we are. When we get politically ecologized, so to speak, then we have more things in commonality. And we accept the difference and acknowledge that and respect that difference. But with politicized, with political societies leaning towards, you know, the politics of classism or whatever, then we start losing our humanness and we get into the technology, and it's easiest for us to lose our identity and we become the whats. So when we lean again towards the ecology like WBAI, I think, is turning towards now paying attention to what's happening to the water, to air, to the land, and to the life, not just human beings being about human beings. So I think that's a good way to lean towards, because then it means that we still have power as a people, as a human being species, one of many species of all the other beings here on Earth, and we recognize that we have to take our part of it rather than being superior and controlling the other parts of life.
The following segment contrasts the views of two influential people in the independent radio movement. First, we will hear from Tony Ford, the general manager of Tucson's independent radio station, KXCI. That will be followed by a counterpoint from Stephen Starr, who recently held the position of interim general manager at Pacifica's station, KPFK, in Los Angeles.
It's difficult in community radio because the individuals who are governing are often the individuals who are producing. What often happens, I find, at least at this station, is the individuals who are producing, because this is their passion and because they feel that they're really offering something that's of value, there's lots of ego involvement, okay? Because it's something you're putting all of yourself and your effort into to produce. Now what happens is you say, the service is what we're offering. And that won't work. Because it does not, that what that equation doesn't take into account is the audience factor. It says, we offer this, and the community should love us for it. Right. It doesn't say, what does the community want? Or what is the community interested in? Well, it becomes a producer's collective. Mm-hmm. And you get some of the same things with groupthink. You get into other situations, you know, I know what my audience is. Well, how? Well, people call me on the phone. Well, that's not statistically valid, we know that. Now, I'm not, you know, I use Arbitron, Media Audit, and things like that as trends. And they're not statistically valid either. We all know that. But it's the best gauge we have just to get an idea. Really important thing is membership is a hugely important factor as a function of loyalty and listenership. And the trick is balancing offering things that the community as a whole or as a majority of the community is not interested in with serving a significant enough portion of your geographic community to be considered a community station and not a clique. And that's where the balance trouble lies. And what I would say, and this has gotten me in trouble here and probably get me in trouble everywhere else, but if you're not serving a significant portion, whatever your organization decides is a significant portion of your community, you're not a community radio station. You're a clubhouse. And until you serve a significant portion of your community, you shouldn't even be able to claim your community radio station. So I mean, here at the station, we kind of look at this like these three legs of what we do. And audience is one of them. How many people are listening? Support is one of them. Membership, underwriting, you know, are there people coming out and saying, yes, I support this program? Because that's kind of a function of loyalty and listenership. And are we serving a political need or an educational need that just cannot be served anywhere else? If those three things are, if all three of them are present, it's an amazing program. I ask that you at least have one leg present. One leg of the triangle has to be present. Two is better, and three is some of the most spectacular program you can produce. People listen, people support it, and you're doing something that no one else will do. And if you can do those three things, you have economic feasibility within your service mission. But so often we get bogged down into what we're offering and not what they're listening to. That is, it would be wonderful if we could all just produce the most diverse, exciting educational programming that we could possibly come up with and serve as many different microcosms of our community as possible, as many different independent and individual social groups, ethnic groups, religious groups, and provide this wide range of really powerful but very targeted programming. Unfortunately, the infrastructure costs of providing this to a grand scale won't allow that. You have to be responsible to the market factors. And it often comes down to nomenclature. We don't exploit a target market. We serve a potential community audience. It's interesting how we just alter the way we say it, and we're really doing the same thing. I come from commercial radio. I hate commercial radio. I watched most of my friends divested. I watched takeovers and stations doing all these ridiculous things. I learned some valuable lessons there about how to maintain a station financially. And the trick is not being reactionary in a pendulum format, but instead trying to find the balance. Our board is really a group of telecommunications and business professionals and people with either really good philanthropic connections or fundraising experience. And they serve as not only a governing board to kind of keep the station on an even keel and make sure that we stay in line with vision and mission, but also really as a support mechanism for fundraising and policy that makes good sense within the framework of that vision and mission. Where it gets really difficult is when boards of that size, because of the passion of the organization, start to manage. And that's where things start to fall apart. I'm not a believer in management by committee. I think you have to have somebody who's to blame. It has to be somebody's fault when things go wrong. Because if it's somebody's rear end on the line, things get accomplished a lot faster. And that's my role. It's my fault. When it goes wrong, it's my fault. For a while, we had lateral management. We had no general manager. We had an equal group of staff managed by committees on an equal governing board. And it was one of the most stressful situations for staff members I can think of. You know, they took 15 different calls a day.
And I think that,
That can be a problem. But really, you have to have controls in place for your board as well. You have to kind of set an idea of, for instance, at our station, the board does not deal with programming. All programming goes to the program director and through me. Now, it has to be in line with the strategic plan and the vision and the mission that the board has created. But as far as what shows go on where, or who's taken off or who's put on, or if programmers are in conflict, that doesn't even go to the board in appeal. It never goes to them. They don't deal with it. They'll set the initial policy, and they will review my performance, and I will review the program director's performance. Right. And if I have failed to deal with the conflict or to appropriately direct the program director, then I will be disciplined or terminated. And I think, you know, program council, that concept of program committee, a program council of board members, can be extremely valuable in generating ideas for new programming, in recognizing long-term programs that have been successful, and in providing kind of strategic vision for where programming may want to go. You get into issues. It is impossible to serve everyone. Therefore, you must define who you're going to serve, which is probably the biggest fight that any community radio station will ever have, and it will go on from the day it starts to the day it goes off the air, whenever that is who's the community, who are we serving? And what I find is that so often when people call up and say, well, I want to do a right-wing conservative talk show, or I would like to do a show that is prayers and sermons. Well, we don't do proselytizing. We don't carry that. We will not carry hate speech of any kind. We can choose not to carry right-wing programming. That's our choice. We've decided who we're going to serve, and we have therefore excluded a large group of people. And that decision has to be made, because otherwise you turn into access TV, which it's first come, first serve, and whoever wants to go on can go on, and you're not serving anyone but the people with the shows then. And that is, you know, obviously not what Pacific or any other community radio station has put in place for. We were doing some spectacularly diverse programming that the vast majority of Tucson would not be able to stand. I mean, not if they wouldn't like it, they would have to turn the radio off or probably go insane because they couldn't deal with the total difference in the format and style of the program that was being put out. And what I implemented here, and it's been somewhat controversial, but it's been very successful, is we will use certain portions of the broadcast day to bring in the dollars, and then we will use other portions to provide the service. And how we do that is we put a morning and afternoon show in place that are different, that are alternatives. The show that I do in the afternoon is an alternative to commercial radio, but it's more mainstream than we've ever produced before. Those programs, for instance, Democracy Now!, which we had a large group of people who didn't want that when we brought it in because it was national programming. We never had national programming before. Democracy Now!, a music mix which has a more limited scope during the day for music programming, a morning and afternoon show, and our Saturday is quite popular, which appeals to an audience that's a little less from the street. And we take those dollars and we use them to support our gay and lesbian show, our feminist show. We use them to support our Latin Wednesday night, which is primarily done in Spanish, even though the vast majority of our audience is Caucasian and Eurasian. So we've got this balance where we'll take money from A, and we'll give them great programming, and we'll use it to support B, which couldn't possibly support itself. And you have to figure out what portion of what has to go where, and where that, because you have to meet the audience, right? So if your audience of funders, of arts patrons, is only going to listen during a certain portion of broadcast day, say afternoon drive or morning drive or daytime, yes, there's a likelihood that if you were to put service programming there, you would reach more people, but you wouldn't reach more funders, and you have to follow them to begin with.
I don't buy that. I think that that's a slightly disingenuous approach to it.
Stephen Starr, who recently served as interim general manager for Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles.
Your programming can be compelling across the board. I can't imagine that there are people with more resources that are able to reach more deeply, if you will, into their pockets. They're somehow going to have to be coaxed. I mean, maybe I'm naive, But the idea that one can only put the meaningful programming on outside of prime time in order to protect the financial base of the station seems to me to be rather kind of disingenuous.
With the exception, of course, of Democracy Now!, which...
Yeah, and that's very challenging programming. So there's an example of programming that is extraordinarily successful in terms of a financial resource for fund drives and things of that nature. And nobody's hiding that in, you know, non-prime time areas. I mean, it's a perfect example of very effective, very, you know, strong programming.
What steps do you see KPFK taking in order to assure a more inclusive representation of all of the communities across the listening area in the governance of the station?
In the governance of the station, or in terms of specifically what most communities seem to be interested in the programming of the station?
I guess I'm basing that on the assumption that one kind of leads to the other.
So good enough. Obviously, the lab is structured in such a way where there's a community needs assessment committee that delivers what is supposed to be a working model of evaluating what various and specific communities would like to see happen at the station. They're supposed to give us feedback and what have you. That's one sort of substructure of the lab's formation that is very much in line with your question. That it's only one part of it, though. And as you also know, there's in the Los Angeles area, there's a Free Pacifica Neighborhood Network formation that includes listener groups that have evolved in some, but by no means all, neighborhoods to reflect perhaps a better communication between listener groups that are local, engaged local listeners in various communities that can have their meetings and come up with their proposals and speak directly to the station. I visited FPNN groups from Long Beach all the way north into the northern valley and stuff like that. But the intention of those meetings are just to signal those groups that there's someone to talk to, that there's an access point, what have you. More significantly than that, even, is the prospect of creating some more formal collective structures in communities. We have initiated here at KPFK a series of discussions inside a variety of communities to initiate collective formation around specifically regional collectives and certain other formations. We have a West South Asian collective with representation in the local Kurd and Iranian and Turkish and Palestinian and Afghani and Indian and Paki communities. And that community, that collective has formed rather quickly, and what I've asked them to do is to develop a mission statement based on goals and objectives and characteristics that can give them all some common ground. So we've had a series of meetings to develop that mission statement, and out of that mission statement is now coming some program proposals. There's crisis across that region right now. I don't need to tell you that. We're about to have a new crisis in Iraq. What's happening in Afghanistan, what's happened in Palestine, et cetera, is all cause for great concern, and that particular collective is developing program proposals now to represent and reflect the needs of the local community that calls that region home and wants to get on the air at KPFK with programs that reflect those concerns and those needs. Very pleased with how that's turning out. We are also, along those same lines, developing collectives in the Latino community, and we have a youth collective forming. We have an Asian collective that we're in discussion on. We have a variety of progressive and activist collectives. There's a variety of collectives that are forming, all which are going to be empowered by us to engage the station in a dialogue around program proposal and mission in order to create sort of a way into the station. And it will happen in concordance with the Community Needs Assessment Committee, and it'll also happen in concordance with the programming staff at the station, the resources we have available here to offer those communities. What I hope happens is that we have a formation, a council formation that includes members of the collectives that I mentioned, members of the various, of the lab, et cetera, members of the internal staff, and we'll have an evolution of thought about how we evaluate program, how we do decision-making processes around program selection, program, how long those commitments are, what the relationship is between the program director and the program council. There's all kinds of concerns that we haven't quite fully worked out yet, but we're certainly in the process of the discussion. And it's an aggressive discussion, and I'm happy to say that I suspect that well before I leave the station, we will have cemented or concretized something that people are in agreement on that allows there to be a program council that has a relationship with the community needs assessment, that has a relationship with the collectives I've described, that has a relationship with the lab, that has representation from those bodies, that allows a programming infrastructure here at the station that can deliver some, you know, true community radio. We're coming out of a period in which there was kind of a bunker mentality here at the station, where there was little or no community input into the decision-making processes. And while we've developed some really good programming internally, and while there's some really good stuff on the air, there's also some real shortcomings in the program schedule and how we've addressed the prospects for a programming grid that is more reflective of the needs of this community radio station. And, you know, there's a white-knuckle approach to time slots. You know, people hang on for dear life. They get a slot, they hang on for dear life. And I understand the logic behind that. I understand why people feel so strongly about their time slots. But I think there's a certain contradiction in terms when a community radio station finds itself with a schedule that is filled with people who feel immovable. And I'm not here to cast any shadows on the program grid as it's currently configured, but I'm also not here to say it isn't violent and it's some perfect balance of community need versus what should be going on with the community radio station.
Stephen Starr served as KPFK's interim general manager for the first 6 weeks of Pacifica's current reorganization. Since this interview, a new permanent general manager has been hired at KPFK, and we'll hear from her in a future installment of Pacifica Matters.
Pacifica Matters is a co-production of the Pacifica Archives and a network of volunteers and listeners who are active with Pacifica and independent listener-supported radio stations in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Building strong communities through strong community radio. If what you just listened to has been inspiring, or if you have ideas or questions about Pacifica, this station, or the role of community radio, please plan to join us for a live national dialogue linking Pacifica and community radio listeners at gathering points across the country in a simulcast, listener-directed discussion. Add your voice to the conversation and meet other members of this national community in this groundbreaking event. Stay tuned to this station for details as they develop.
Special thanks for help with this production go to Pacifica Station KPFA in Berkeley, KPFK in Los Angeles, and independent station KXEI in Tucson. If you're on the web, please visit www.newcollegenews.net and click on the link for the Pacifica Now conference to obtain summaries and proposals generated by the workshops and the conference mentioned in this program.